Okay, guys, I'm just happy to be talking to Yorgi and Anna, and you all have been at these protests almost every night. And just for all y'all who have not been following my work, I've been covering these protests in Georgia pretty much since they started. And so the protests have been going into their second week. And the more that the government, responds with violence, the more resilient the people get. And so for y'all who don't know, Georgia Dream government has proposed this bill that will limit the roles of civil society organizations in Georgia and independent media. The main thing is that if you make more than 20% of your budget from foreign funds, then the government says that we have a right to look at your books. Now, what's interesting about this bill, I'm going to post it on the show notes, but the bill, they published it in English, and honestly, it looks very ambiguous, and it looks like they can change the language at any time to make it mean what they want it to mean. And so it's not even specific. It just gives them a lot of room to manipulate. And so I've read this bill, and yeah, it's just so many problems. And so Georgi and Anna, you both are here to like talk about your role in these protests and why you're there. And so Georgi, I just want to start with you, man. Like, welcome to Black Diplomats Podcast. I really want to you to all talk about why you're protesting this bill beyond what I said, and why it's important for you to be out there every night and face this constant violence of rubber bullets and tear gas and these thugs on the street that attack you.
Thank you so very much for taking your time and inviting us to speak on your podcast. It's a really, really great honor. I'd like to begin discussing the subject, the protest, within historical context. So the first things first, 20% of Georgia has been occupied by Russia, and ever since, for over 200 years, Russia has been trying to undermine my country and do various sorts of stuff in order to increase its influence. And historically, we fought against Russia in multiple wars. And now this is just a new chapter by Russia to attack sovereign state and have their hands in our legal system, in our government system. Now, the situation on the ground is fairly simple. This law would limit a lot of democratic processes in our country, including free media, including a non-governmental sector. And as you so well pointed out, it is articulated in such a vague and in such an unclear manner that this law can take all kinds of shapes, like we've seen in Russia, because the similar law has been introduced in Russia back in 2012, and we know that fast forward the 12 years, they ended up banning some people from even being eligible to participate in election or being detained, being fined, and so on and so forth. Therefore, we believe that it's very important for us to make a stand here and say no to the Russian law in Georgia. That's probably the best I can do with that.
Yeah. Anna, tell us about yourself, Anna, and welcome.
Hi again. Yeah. I'm Anna, I'm Georgian, I'm 24, and that's just about as much as you need to know before I get into the conversation. So I grew up in an era of unregulated internet, and so I had access to very, very many ideas from Europe, from America, from anywhere around the world. So I do believe that these very substantially contributed to who I am today. And I also do believe that most of the good that has come to our country has come through European Union, has come through America, who has come through various Eastern European countries who stood with us in 2008. And what Russia is trying to do, as it always has, is to cut off all this access that we have to different resources, to different knowledge, to different partners, as it always has. like the imperialistic Russia was against us. The Soviet Russia has basically messed us up. And right now, even, you know, as a full-fledged country, as a, well, not entirely a republic, a federation, it is trying to at least, if not annex us completely, then take away our self-sufficiency. And because the government has been run by an oligarch for the past like 12 years now, I think it's been, yeah, since 2012, Georgia is very weak in terms of, like, it's very weak politically, it's very weak in foreign relations, it's very weak in self-defense, and we're just basically left with nothing against Russia. And right now, this just feels like this last-ditch effort to take away what little independence we have. And so as somebody who's grown up with both Georgian values and as somebody who's been spending a lot of time, you know, getting acquainted with, let's say, the European way of life, different countries, different points of view, I do believe that if this law passes, it's just going to screw us over as a country, me as an individual, my family, everybody I know, basically. So that is why I stand out there and I protest no matter what happens, because at this point, it's not, you can't choose a middle ground. It's either all or nothing. And considering the government has literally brought out thugs to, like, scare our people into obedience, and they're calling people on their private numbers, basically telling them, we have your address, we're going to beat you up. That has started happening today. I do think that it's all...
Have you gotten those messages?
Not yet. Not quite yet. I'm not active enough in the political scene to matter to them yet, I think. But like a couple of people I know have gotten those messages. Some of the political parties and activists have gotten those, not necessarily messages, they're calls coming in from Ukrainian numbers, which is insane to me. And the fact that the government is stooping this low, like stooping to these level of pettiness in order to get what they want, is just astounding to me. And there's just no way back.
So, Georgi, they're firing rubber bullets and all these things at you. How have you all been preparing to deal with the violence? Because the goal is to scare you from coming, but you still continue to come. I'm interested in what you've learned from dealing with these people on a day in and day out basis.
I would say there are quite a few things that we have a clear understanding of when it comes down to protesting against riot police. The first thing I would say is that you need to have a face mask, a gas mask that's going to protect you from the tear gas. You need to have goggles over your eyes to make sure that your eyes are protected. You need to wear jeans or some tough material. So those are technical stuff. The other thing is those special cops are wearing heavy materials, and there are a lot more of us than them. So how long can they chase us while they're wearing like 25 kilograms on top of their body? So they get exhausted even more than we do, because at the end of the day, we're just standing there and with our friends and family members. So the fact that they're unable to use actual real guns, and I firmly believe that Georgian military is not ever going to shoot Georgian people, because Georgia's youth is of crucial importance to the military, because they're designed to protect those youngsters. So shooting them down would not fly well, neither with Georgian people, neither with general population, or the world, because everybody's seeing what's going on, everybody's understanding the situation and the pervasive Russian influence in Georgian government. So as long as the army is not shooting us, rubber bullets can only do so much, right? So that's the part where the courage comes in, and the first couple of lines of defense are simply people who are courageous enough to understand that it's better to get a rubber bullet today than poisoned and killed like, I don't know, any Russian opposition or social activist leader tomorrow. Or the same thing goes in Belarus for most part. So we do have a good understanding that it's okay to get hurt to smaller extent than get hurt a lot tomorrow. And everyone is bent together under the same banner of understanding this idea. So I guess there is no stopping that part, I guess.
Anna, what's going to happen if this bill goes through and becomes a law and the president, Salome, said, you know, like she, you know, the Georgian president said that she will veto it, but then Georgia Dream will still try to work around her to make it a law anyway. But if this bill, what, through all of its processes, passes and it's legal, what's the next plan?
Honestly, we'll probably cross that bridge when we get there, but all we know is that there is no way we can allow this bill to remain in effect. Like, right now, again, we're trying our best to protest peacefully. We're not really bothering anybody except maybe the couple of drivers who are going to be an hour late home, because we have had to barricade the streets for a bit. But if this law passes, essentially, what this means is eventual, I wouldn't say death of a nation, but the subjugation of a nation. So if push comes to shove, there is probably nothing that we're not willing to do to get our country back. And like, we really need these people to leave. Like, we really need the Georgian Dream to leave because they've made promises in the past and they haven't kept any of them. Matter of fact, like around a year ago, they tried to pass the same bill, and even then, protests happened. The protests on the government side got violent because they started using tear gas. But then they halted the process. Even then, they were starting to wage the info wars because they were telling us, we understand that you misunderstood what this law means. So we're going to try to pass the bill again when you guys are more complacent. And surprise, surprise, we're not more complacent.
So, Georgi, tell me how old you are, first of all. And then secondly, what's for you if the bill passes? Can you just describe how you feel the life will change and how people specifically will be impacted?
So I'm 29. And to get to your question, right? So first things first, they're going to limit operations of free media and non-governmental sector. And when I'm talking about like non-governmental sector, right, they sometimes get bad reputations here and there. So let me provide some insight. Like USAID, for example, provides us with funds to restore churches, to restore historical monuments. So all of that is going to deteriorate, and it's going to deteriorate very quickly because Georgia is not very rich. So cultural preservation is going to fly out of the window. Now, people with various types of disabilities who are receiving some medical assistance through NGOs, people who are in legal trouble with the government, and receive some legal consultation for free from NGOs, that's going to fly. People who have their rights stripped away, and I'm talking about the most vulnerable people, victims of various crimes, such as women who are victims of sexual harassment and rape, who receive free legal consultation, that's going to fly out of the window. And people who generally concentrate on human rights issues, that's also gonna go. Moreover, to basically wrap this up together, right? A significant lifeblood of Georgia is happening through the medium of NGOs because they receive funds from European Union and from US, Canada, and other countries alike in order to maintain some form of like civil society, they to help people, and all of that is simply gonna go away if that law passes. Moreover, there is going to be another side, which is a political side. So NGOs are responsible for observing the elections. So they invite their associates from European Union and US to help us observe the election. Now, if you were to be a government and you wanted to fraud the elections, the best way you could do that is to make sure that no European or US observers visit Georgia during the election time. And you could conveniently do that by reducing the amount of NGOs that can operate and invite their associates and partners from Europe and US. So there is the first part is like the one that we're going to feel immediately, but also more of a long-term kind of frustration. However, the second part, the elections that we are going to have in October 2024 are going to be frauded massively and if this law passes.
Okay. Anna, I talk to a lot of people under 30 in Georgia, and the conversation is always about immigration and people who feel like there's no future for them in Georgia, or they feel so depressed because there are no other political options beyond Georgia Dream, and they don't want to live in a country that is a satellite state for Russia. And so they say that if I'm in Georgia, I'm working hard every day, I'm going to university, I'm doing everything right, but nothing is coming in my favor, then I will leave. And you have a lot of people who are doing that. I want to ask you about, you're 24 years old, and what do you think about your country right now as a 24-year-old Georgian woman and as somebody who is fighting for it, but you have so many more many people who are discouraged and they just leave?
Well, to start off, the situation overall sucks. Sure, it's not great. It's pretty bad. Our youngsters are encouraged, if not bullied, by the government to seek shelter elsewhere. But I'm going to be pretty honest with you. When the protests first started, I was hopeless. Like, I was on that same wave. I was like, if this doesn't work out, I'm just out of here. I'll find something. I can find something, right? But as the protests go on, the one thing that has really kept me grounded is, like, our people and the way they handle stuff. At the protests, I have seen kindness from people I did not think humanly possible. Like, we have this thing about Georgia saying that we are historically a unified nation, meaning we overcame all of our invaders, and there were a bunch of those, honestly, by standing united. And all the time I thought, you know what, you know, that's what some guy wrote down in our history books just so we feel better about ourselves. No. There are always going to be sellouts. There are always going to be people who are trying to make your life in this country a little more difficult. But the people I have seen in this country give up their resources, give up their safety to help us is like enough to keep me here and keep me fighting for a better future. So again, the circumstances that have been forced upon us are unfortunate. But I do believe in our people. I do believe in what we're capable of if we stand together. And it's something I'm willing to fight for no matter what it takes. So that's my current take on things.
Okay, good. Thanks. And so, you know, Georgi, the Georgia Dream argues that this bill is no different than laws that are in the United States, that are in other European countries that monitor foreign money coming in. And what is your response to that?
Well, first of all, I would probably trust US and Europe's governments on that one over Russian oligarch. So with that out of the way, I would say US law, FARA, is based about is specifically designed for lobbyists who are lobbying some stuff, and it is not designed for NGOs and free media. I'm pretty sure if Biden whatever government you're going to have, if they decided one day, hey, I'm gonna check all the books for all the medias, and then if they receive some funding out from outside sources, they're getting closed or fined or labeled as foreign agents or spies, which is roughly correct translation of the gist of the word in Georgian, then I'm sure that a lot of Americans would come out with pitchforks and make sure that that doesn't happen. So when it comes down to the only instance that this has ever came close to be in European Union, it was Hungary's, Viktor Orban's Hungary. And guess what? European Union said no to that, and they could not actually pass the law because Hungary is already part of the European Union, and it was not consistent with European values. The only place where we have seen a law like this is in Putin's Russia, and because that it was taken in effect in 2012, we have a really good understanding where this law might develop, because it's 2024 now. And we've seen the law, we've seen the effects of the law, and the essence of this is that, A, if you're not going to take Blinken's word on it or your highest representatives of your government, you can at least be sure that the Russian oligarchs and the Russian government lies more than any other government or most of other governments combined. So that's a good reminder for, I know that you guys have a lot of internal like clashes and whatnot, but that's a good reminder for an American people to like keep in back of their heads, like, yeah, your government might be lying, but like governments elsewhere are doing a piece of art when it comes down to lying and being deceitful and assholes in general.
You know what's interesting? You talk about assholes. Like, I think I can't. I've always tried to reach out to Georgia Dream for comment and ask them to come on my show. It happened one time, but what they did was that they gave me this one person to always talk to, and I feel like they were trying to control their own narrative, and that it just became a bit ridiculous. And then I go to Georgia almost every year. I live in Ukraine, so I've been, yeah, I live in Ukraine, so I cover the war there. So I've for these past couple years, I haven't been to Georgia, but you know, those guys don't talk to you. But then I realize how they treat these high level European and US oppositions, and they pretty much give them the middle finger. Then I, at first, I'm like, damn, why are they not talking to me? But then they tell like Charles Michel to go fuck himself. Then I don't feel so bad, because who am I compared to, you know, like these high level European Union leaders and Anthony Blinken? So they tell them to go fuck themselves, and of course they're going to tell Terrell Jermaine Star of the Black Mess podcast to go fuck himself too. Like, so right? But I mean, really, it's true, right? But you know, I want to ask you all about the opposition in Georgia, because obviously, you either want this government to resign at minimum, you know, like resign, or just at minimum pull back this bill. But you have elections in October. And what do you think about the opposition? Anna, I'll just start with you.
They're not ideal, honestly. But right now, we don't have the time or like the mindset for ideal. Basically, what we're looking for right now is, where the Georgian Dream has also screwed us over, is they promised to lower the barrier for elections at which a party would be able to enter the parliament. And then they didn't do that. So our main idea right now, at least mine, is to make sure that the parliament is essentially made out of multiple coalitions. We are not looking for any singular party to take the lead. And I understand that sounds chaotic. It always does. But that is the only option we have right now. And again, I think it's time that Georgian people stopped relying on one singular leader. So I think my thought process behind this is that if there are multiple coalitions, multiple parties with clashing views, even some that I don't agree with, when they have to like make up parts of the government and when they have to appoint, let's say, the general prosecutor or somebody who's the head of elections, they're going to have to compromise between each other. So then it's not going to be a singular party controlling every resource we have in the country, because Georgian Dream controlling every resource in the country is what got us where we are. They have the entire lawmaking system, they have the entire like courts, they have the police, they have the administrative resources that they basically force to come out in the country like and protest for them. They literally take down lists of people who don't go. It's that bad. So my thinking behind this is that if we get rid of these people and we actually have multi parties, we have different people, again, it's not going to be ideal, but it is going to balance itself out a bit, because when forming a government, somebody's going to have to compromise on this, somebody's going to have to compromise on that, and then we will not have a singular ruling party, so to say. Or at least that's the ideal route.
I got you. Georgi, what are your thoughts about the opposition?
So the pattern is like, we've seen it in Ukraine. We've seen it in Moldova. We've seen it multiple times, right? A pro-European government that has gone a bit overboard is replaced by Russian, pro-Russian government or an oligarch. And this is the situation now. I understand that there are some opposition parties that I particularly dislike, and there are some that are not that terrible. However, given the current electoral system, I think what's going to happen is that some smaller opposition parties are going to create coalitions before the election, so they will get a list of people who are most well-known, most proficient at what they're doing, and those people are going to get selected by various groups. I genuinely hope that let me provide some quick context, right? In 2020, there is a thing in Georgia called parallel voting, right? And according to parallel voting, Georgian Dream scored 44%. However, in actual voting, they did write 48%, which turned them into not a simple majority, but a constitutional majority, right? So, my personal goal is that knowing fully well that they're bribing people, they're scaring people, they're compromising people with like various forms of coercion, right, is happening right now. I know that it's going to be very difficult election because of these factors, right? My goal is to make sure that they cannot get their hands on a constitutional majority. They cannot update our constitution, and our constitutional goals and aspirations are protected by members, MPs from the opposition. And that is very possible, and that is very easy, given that if we detect signs of fraud, which we did back in 2020, and we screamed about it and we protested about it, that EU, our associates in European Union and in US, discarded that evidence and still kind of agreed with Georgian Dream power. I hope that this time around they will use more detailed approach. They do better research, because the evidence for the fraud back in 2020 was overwhelming, and unfortunately it didn't get enough attention, it didn't get enough recognition, both in US, Canada, and in European Union countries. And I believe that should solve the problem. Technically, I think what's going to happen is once the majority is majority of the people in parliament are from opposition parties, and those are very different, right? There are like opposition parties that I desperately do not agree with. But as soon as we have that, I hope to see a second election being run, which is going to be free and fair election. And that's going to be the deciding factor to see how the Georgian population votes without pressure, coercion, bribery, and other kinds of, excuse my French, but all kinds of bullshit that's going on in current Georgian situation.
Yeah, so and I'll get to the last part, but basically I want to give some context to what you're saying. So when you're talking about 2020, Georgi is talking about the parliamentary election of 2020. And so after that, there was a local election, right? That happened in 2021. I know that because I was there to cover that. And so the thresholds that Georgi is talking about, basically there was a point where you just needed 1% in order to enter parliament. Now it's 5%. And then another part of it is that technically you can't form a bloc anymore. Like, so there's a difference between coalition and then a bloc. Like a bloc is how you can like kind of gather up and like put all the votes together. Like you legally can't do that anymore. Just to give everyone the context of how it works. And so it's just an example of how a lot of Georgia Dream's critics suggest that they're making the thresholds difficult in order to change the challenge their power. That's just a little bit of insight. I'll put my own reporting in the show notes from my own articles where I break all that stuff down because I spoke with the opposition and all that. But Anna, really, I mean, it comes back to this voting. So, with these protests, you all are fighting for the future of your country, and the European Union members have come out really strongly against Georgia Dream. And everything that I hear from my side here in the West is that yes, we can put these strong statements out, and yes, people are talking about sanctions, but ultimately they're waiting for the Georgian people to make decisions, because what everyone thinks about here when they think about Georgian resistance is the Rose Revolution. And even though Saakashvili is his own person, we're not even going to talk about him because he's a different animal. What they did see, that's a whole different can of worms, but he's currently rotting in a jail cell, for unfair reasons, but again, it's a whole nother story. But basically, they saw the Georgian people take over in a revolution, and so then the United States and the Europeans could come in and say, okay, we will recognize this government that this peaceful revolution created. And so now you're in a situation where, good, you are protesting. I actually spoke with one person who said they actually don't want a revolution. They actually want to be able to force the people to resign or vote them out, like in these legal processes. And I just want to ask you, what do you, there are so many things that can happen, Anna. And again, people are waiting for the Georgian people to respond. And what are your thoughts about everything I just said?
Okay, so to kick this off, honestly, I do not think that we're looking for a revolution if there are other ways to get what we want. And to be slightly critical over here, I do believe that the European Union and the US have sometimes been a little slow in acknowledging the issues that were happening with Georgia previously from the 2008 war. So I understand they're looking for a revolution, but like we need sufficient support. There are only so many people that can come out screaming and protest every day, right? And the pressure that the European Union is currently exerting on the Georgian Dream is working. I can say with confidence that it's working because I'm looking at these people come out every day and they're losing their shit. Like, these government officials are officially off their rockers with the things that they're starting to do and things that they're like starting to say and try to press. And so I do think that we're currently exerting enough pressure on them to be able to force results without a revolution. Because again, like speaking of a revolution is always painful and scary, and it's something I think we'd rather not do, but we are absolutely prepared to do it. Because again, a very personal thing here, but I've got one life. right? And there is no point in trying to live this life subjugated by a different empire, like being stripped off of all my personal freedoms and the privileges. Well, I mean, in Georgia, there aren't that many, but there are some, right? So I would like to live this one life free and, well, more or less happy. And if I have to fight for it, if I have to get hurt for it, it's something that I'm willing to do. And I think that's the mindset of most of the people protesting out in the streets.
Georgi, I'll give you the last word.
I couldn't agree more to Anna's little detour on her personal feelings. I firmly believe that peace is one of the noblest aspirations, but in order to sustain peace, you must be willing to fight. And I'm willing to fight for my country, and I'm willing to fight for the future of myself, my family members, and friends. And I'm sure that they are willing to return the favor and stand by my side at times of need. So those are my feelings towards the subject, and I think a lot of people can relate to that in terms of living without dignity, living without freedom, and living under the occupation by the second grade discount version of Lukashenko in Georgia would not be something that I want to do in my life. And I would not want that for my younger siblings and my other friends. So that's where I stand.
All right, y'all. Thanks so much for coming on the show. We're going to continue to cover these protests and heard from people who are under the age of 30 about the future. And so you all gave us some really good perspectives into what you all see every day. So thank y'all, man. And I'll definitely be following, and I'll be coming to the country this year to see you all at work. And so, yeah, thanks a lot.
Thank you, man. It really means whole ton that you have invited us and that you're taking interest. You're showing all this information to our friends in USA. And I'm sure that your reach is far more reaching than just locally. So I appreciate that. And it helps us get up out of the bed in the morning, because we know that there are some good people showing our good fight to people that are really important and really matter.